you all for holding. You will be on a listen-only mode until the question and answer segment of today's call. I would also like to inform you today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections at this time, please disconnect. If you need assistance during this call, please press star zero and I will be online to assist you. I'll now turn the call over to your host, Governor Tim Pawlenty. Sir, you may begin.
Well, thank you, and thanks for those who are joining the call. I'm in Washington, about to leave here in a little bit, but really the main thing I wanted to say was just to share the testimony, the highlights of it from the Senate Commerce Committee this morning, chaired by Senator McCain, and had, a very robust hearing. The panel that preceded when I was on featured Senator Rick Santorum and another senator and Congressman Gutnick and another congressperson, and very lively, sometimes a heated exchange, and I thought it was a really good airing out of the issues and concerns. The panel I was on included an FDA representative and me. I shared with the committee Minnesota's plans to move forward, regardless of what they do on a federal level. I won't rehash all of that with you, but I did try to emphasize to the this panel a couple of things. One is that we are in a crisis in healthcare, and it's going to get worse with the demographic shift. A piece of that, certainly not the only piece, but a piece of it is prescription medicines, that even with the Medicare prescription drug benefit, which I applaud and think is a good piece of progress, the cost issue remains, and the costs are going up, as you all know, 10 to 25% a year generally, and in prescription medicines about the same, and it's unsustainable, and particularly, and it's going to get more unsustainable as the demographic shift occurs. So we pleaded with the committee to take action and said, acknowledge that this isn't an ideal solution, but it will bring relief. We also indicated that it may be the interest of this issue to have the whole country move all at once to this type of approach, because it might overwhelm the Canadian infrastructure and Canadian and American regulatory capabilities. And so suggested a compromise to them that pilot projects be allowed to go forward, that we would obviously volunteer and lead maybe the first of those pilot projects, and again, we're going to go forward regardless. And it was a good debate. The FDA did what they normally do, which is express their generalized concerns. I tried to tell the committee that as applied to established, credible, reputable, accredited pharmacies in Canada, there just is no evidence to suggest that they are unsafe, and as applied to those types of institutions, the FDA's concerns are not valid. And you may have noted in recent news coverage that the FDA commissioner was in Canada recently, and as he left, the Canadian Health Agency clarified their position and said they had investigated FDA's concerns and that they were, quote-unquote, not substantiated. And so, again, there are generalized concerns about rogue pharmacies around the world and on the Internet and even within the United States, and there should be concern for those. Some of those operations are questionable, but that is not the issue here, and that is not the proposal here. We're trying to make it clear that our proposal focuses on and is limited to established, reputable, credible, accredited pharmacies in Canada. And so we hope the testimony was helpful. It seemed like the members who were present were quite supportive. That included Senator Boxer and Senator Dorgan and Senator McCain and Senator Snow. Senator Levin was there for a while. It wasn't quite clear what his position was, although he seemed concerned. Senator Santorum showed up as a testifier, and he was opposed. But it looks like it's an uphill battle here in Washington to try to get this done as part of the Medicare bill. There's still a sliver of hope that they might include it, but it appears that it will not be part of the Medicare bill. And many are saying if it's not part of that bill, it really might be one of the few remaining opportunities to try to get it at all. I hope that's not the case. But in any event, that's kind of the overview, the highlights of the hearing and the testimony. I'll be happy to take your questions about that or anything else that's on your mind. So go ahead and open up the lines. Hello?
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one, star one. Sir, we have several questions. Our first one comes from Bill Werner.
Good afternoon, Governor. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you fine, Bill.
Good. A couple-part question. Senator McCain suggested that that you be ready for anything as far as legal action, as I recall, on your plan, and he suggested that you try to get approval from the Minnesota legislature to kind of as additional insurance. I think I'm paraphrasing the gist of what he said. You got any plans to do that? And secondly, what's happening in terms of, I know Senator Dorgan backed you up pretty heavily in that hearing. What's going on with North Dakota and possibly Wisconsin as far as getting any sort of coalition together? Those are my two questions, sir.
Yes, thank you. Well, first of all, Senator McCain did warn me that the pharmaceutical industry will stop at nothing to stop our efforts. He didn't limit that to legal action. I wasn't quite sure what he had in mind, and his comments concerned me a bit. But I'm thankful for his support and his strong words at the hearing today. They were very strong and very bold, and I hope that we can get Senator McCain to come to Minnesota and be part of our efforts to promote this here. As to your question, we don't believe we need legislative approval to go forward with our plan. We are going to go forward with the plan, and our hopes is to have it up and running and implemented even before the legislative session begins. That being said, I think the legislative session would present an opportunity to bring more visibility and awareness to the issue and our proposal, and maybe even enhance it in some way that might be legislatively required. So as a platform to, you know, raise the issue and to debate it and to get more public awareness around it and maybe some political tailwind behind it, I would be willing to submit the proposal in some form to the legislature for either ratification or enhancement, and that would, I think we could get it passed. And so I think that was a good suggestion by Senator McCain, but we aren't going to wait for the legislature to implement it.
Understand. Would you potentially do that? Would you do that even if you weren't seeing legal challenges from the FDA or elsewhere? Would you submit it to the legislature and try to get an expansion of it this session, 2014?
Yeah, I really don't see those two things as related, Bill, because there's, you know, the FDA is operating under federal law and federal authority, and so there's really nothing the legislature can do or not do to affect the FDA's position directly. So I don't think those two things are connected, but the value of bringing it to the legislature is to get, you know, additional political and public relations support for the concept, and maybe there are some ways that through legislative action we could enhance the project or the proposal as well.
So you'll bring it to the legislature, you think, regardless?
Yes, I think that's a good suggestion. He just kind of hit me with a cold in the hearing, but again, we will have it up and running by the time the legislature convenes, if I have my way about it. But as a supplement to what we're doing, I think it would be helpful to have additional attention and debate at the legislature. So we'll submit some of it or some portion of it to the legislature for consideration.
Thanks, Governor.
Sir, our next question comes from Eric Escola.
Governor, Senator Boxer thought you should try to talk to Governor Schwarzenegger about it. I wonder if you'll talk about it at the governor's meeting this weekend, and what else is on your agenda besides prescription drugs at the governor's meeting?
Yeah, thank you. I forgot to address part of Bill's question regarding Governor Holman. I'm sorry, Bill, but I'll just jump back to that for a second. I did speak to Governor Holman about the prescription medicine issues when I was in North Dakota a weekend or so ago, and his position seemed to be, and I don't want to speak for him, but his position seemed to be that he was interested in the topic or the concept. He wanted to see a congressional action so that there was clear federal guidance and legality around it, and he was willing to kind of keep in touch with us and study it, but I didn't, at least at that time, didn't get the sense he was ready to jump on board our plan. But I'm going to stay in touch with him about it and see if we can't, you know, more formally recruit him to our effort. Eric, as to your question, Governor Schwarzenegger is going to appear only by video, a teleconference or video screen down at the RGA meeting in Florida. So I don't know that I'll have a chance to speak to him directly, although I might be able to do that electronically. I did have breakfast this morning with a California congressman who knows Governor Schwarzenegger very well, and he is going to bring these issues to the governor's attention, and I'm also separately trying to get a meeting with Governor Schwarzenegger on this and a variety of other issues, and we hope to get that done sometime in the next few weeks. But I certainly would intend to bring it to his attention and see if we can get his interest and help. As I said in the hearing, though, there is a tipping point here. While we want some help from other states, we don't want too much help, because if the whole country turned to this kind of approach all at once, is a risk of overwhelming the Canadian pharmaceutical infrastructure, the pharmacy infrastructure, and it may be in everyone's best interest to sequence it so that this is done in pieces for two reasons. One is we can see how it works, and two, the Canadian system can ramp up and accommodate the demand so it doesn't hit them all at once.
The other major priorities for the governor's meeting?
Well, I do know it's going to be interesting to see what kind of reception I get there, because I think I'm the only Republican governor who is on board with this proposal, and it's quite concerning, I think, to the pharmaceutical industry, and so it'll be interesting. But the number of topics that will be discussed are Homeland Security, health care reform and cost containment, which is a formal session that I'll be attending tomorrow morning. There also is concerns about the transportation bill that's pending in Congress, the federal transportation funding bill, certainly jobs, state budgets. One that I would like to bring up, although I didn't see it formally on the agenda, is education reform. It seems like the agenda this time is more focused on health care and transportation and homeland security.
Governor, a little bit about something that's happening here tomorrow. Linda Berglund is going to have a news conference. Let me just read from the release. It says, regarding the impact and effect of the budget cuts made last session on low-income families with disabled adults, she's going to have civic leaders, clergy, advocacy groups, and citizens affected by the cuts to be in attendance. Now, stipulating, I don't know exactly, and you don't know exactly what she's going to say, but what about, what's your view of the impact of the budget cuts on low-income families with disabled adults?
Let's say, I don't know precisely which program or what her set of concerns will be, Eric, but it might relate to increases in co-pays or contributions towards care attendance. I've heard from family members of who have adult disabled members in their family, and their amounts that they contribute towards care attendance and other services were increased instead of a kind of a flat amount at a low level. It was became more of a sliding scale, a fee program based on income levels. And so we have families saying they used to pay $40 a month, and now they're paying $140 a month, or maybe even more. I don't know for sure that that's her concern, but that's one of the concerns that's been raised. In those families where they have the means, you know, given the size of our budget deficit, I don't think it was unreasonable for us to ask for a bigger copay under those circumstances. And then, you know, the Democrats want to relive all of the budget debates of last year, and there may be areas where we have to go back and soften the impacts or revisit as money allows, but we can't spend money we don't have. And Minnesota remains as one of the most generous, if not the most generous state in the nation in social services, and we got to live within our means. And unlike the federal government, you know, we can't spend money we don't have. And you know, those debates, we had those debates. We have solved the budget problem, and we need to start focusing on where do we go from here, and quit debating what happened last session and start looking forward to the future.
I've got a couple more, but I'll certainly stand aside for anyone else.
Patrick Armijo, your line is open.
Hello, Governor. Patrick Armijo with KSTP. Switching topics to gay marriage, after what happened in Massachusetts, there's now a proposal here in Minnesota for a constitutional amendment blocking gay marriage, but the state already has a law that blocks it. What's your thought on that?
Well, I don't support gay marriage. I believe marriage should be a sacred institution reserved for a relationship between a man and a woman. That's how I voted as a legislator. I was in favor of the Defense of Marriage Act. I think I co-authored it, if I recall correctly, although I don't remember for sure. And I'm told that the Defense of Marriage Act in Minnesota probably would repel the legal effect of another state's court decisions or statutes legalizing gay marriage. But if since that's not a for sure, and also because statutes can be changed by a simple majority of the legislature, this may well be an issue that we want to consider for a constitutional amendment, and I would support that.
Okay, so you would support that, and it would go to voters at that point
right,
to make it official, right?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. you, Governor. That's all that I had.
Jim Buttig, your line is open.
Hi, Governor. I think you just answered my question.
Okay.
You would support Representative Holberg's and Senator Bachman's and proposal to place the Domestic Marriage Act on the ballot in 2004?
Yeah, I think I just did it. Did you hear the answer to the previous question, Tim?
Good, Governor.
I think I could restate it for you, but if you caught it, I could save everybody the time. Because I think I just went through that. But the short answer is yes. I don't know what their specific proposal is. I don't want to embrace their names necessarily. But yeah, I mean, the previous question I think was asked, and I answered it fully. But if you have anything further on that, I'll be happy to answer it.
That's good enough. Thank you, Governor.
Okay.
Lori Sturdivant, your line is open.
Thank you. Hi, Governor Plenty.
Hi, Lori.
I'm wondering whether you are anticipating either a direct FDA intervention or some kind of an industry legal intervention to stop you from going forward with the drug reimportation website, and if you've been anticipating that and working with the Attorney General's office to try to forestall or respond to that if that does come about.
Coincidentally, the other person on my panel today was an FDA official, and I somewhat jokingly in my testimony said, I don't know if they're going to sue or put me in jail or whatever, and it was hopeful that either today or at some point in the future they would signal what their intentions are in terms of potential enforcement against us. He offered to work with us to review our plans and to try to give us some guidance as those get developed and deployed. I'm not sure where that will lead, whether they truly mean to be helpful or whether they want to be an obstruction or whether they want to take legal action. I just don't think we know enough yet, Lori, but I'm hesitant to speak for them, and I don't think they know for sure. They've issued conflicting statements. In a Boston Globe article a few weeks ago, an FDA official was quoted as saying they would not pursue states like Minnesota or plans like these. More recently, we've gotten some ambiguous statements from them where they have been non-committal about whether they would or wouldn't pursue an enforcement action. I feel quite strongly that the plan that we have fits within the current FDA's enforcement guidelines and that there is not a legal issue or violation if we pursue our plan. So while we welcome their input and their help and their expertise, we're going to charge ahead, and I'm not worried about their legal claims or enforcement actions. We'll deal with them if they come.
If I may ask, just follow up with that, you're saying that it would take more than a polite request at this point from them to stop you. It would take something more by way of an enforcement action or some kind of an injunction.
Yes, unless they come up with some new or different evidence than what they have shown so far, we will move ahead unless they do something official or formal to try to block us or stop us.
Okay, thank you.
Scott Woolridge.
Governor, pharmacists in a couple of states now have raised concerns about reimportation of drugs from Canada. They're concerned about the impact on their business, especially in rural areas. Are you taking steps to address those concerns?
Perhaps. The concerns of the pharmacists get framed as safety issues. That's so they kind of wrap themselves in the banner of safety. I don't think those concerns are legitimate as applied to, again, credible, reputable, established, accredited Canadian pharmacies. There's just no evidence to suggest that's a concern or should be a concern. That being said, pharmacists play a pretty important role in rural areas in the healthcare delivery system, and we would like to find a way to include them in this program if they are added value. We don't want to just, include them so that we had one more step and there's more paperwork and then we have to pay them for something that doesn't add value to the transaction. So we're searching for ways to include them, to pay them for some part of this that they would add value. The pharmacies that we're working with in Canada say that they have some ideas about how to structure that, and so I'm very open to that and would be willing to try to do that. The only thing I'm concerned about is two things. One is they have to add value in the transaction that's not duplicated by the Canadian pharmacy. And secondly, we need to make sure that their involvement doesn't cross the line into a commercial activity and therefore jeopardize our legal position, because the exemption that we're trying to fit under speaks to personal use, personal purchases for personal use, and we would have to structure it so the pharmacies are not making the purchase but are involved in some consultative role for a fee.
Thank you, sir.
Bill Warner, your line is open.
Hi, Governor. A couple of follow-ups here, if I may. First of all, one about the gay marriage issue, and then if you wouldn't mind coming back to me on a welfare question. The Outfront Minnesota people, if approved, this proposal, meaning the constitutional amendment, would for the first time actually enshrine discrimination in state constitution. Would you care to respond to that?
Well, I think I heard you correctly, cut out a little bit at the front, but you were saying that the Outfront Minnesota group
Correct. Has
asserted that putting it in the Constitution would enshrine discrimination?
You're correct, yes.
Okay. Well, my response to that generally would be that marriage is a legal status that is viewed as a privilege, not as a right, and it's been bestowed by both governments and religious institutions. So as a legal matter, I don't know that they're correct. And secondly, if it goes to the voters, it would be, and by the way, a constitutional amendment, the governor can't sign or veto. It goes to the voters. I can certainly take a position on it, and I would. But, the voters would have a role in sorting out the fairness of the proposition, and I think they have pretty good judgment.
If I may, also on the welfare issue, I believe what Senator Berglund's intent is to lay claim to that $13 or so million, the welfare bonus that HHS sent to the state, and reallocate some of that money to try to mitigate some of the cuts. What do you think about that?
Well, we'd be happy to work with Senator Berglund or others on the best use of that federal bonus money. If she has some ideas, we'd be happy to hear them, and I think we should use it for, welfare or social service-related purposes, and we would be open to that.
Thank you, Governor.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Eric Escola, your line is open.
Governor, you had a full day out there in Washington yesterday. I wondered if you had any other meetings that would be newsworthy on funding for North Star Corridor or any innumerable federal state issues of anything beyond just the drugs.
Is this Eric Ebola? Oh, no, it's Eric Escola. Okay. Yeah. Eric, I had a number of meetings throughout the day yesterday and into the evening last night, one of which was with Congressman Oberstar. I did speak to him. One of our topics was the North Star Corridor, both mostly just compared notes about what he had heard from the FTA and what I had heard from the FTA. I think we're both on the same page in the sense of we're waiting for the report that we're expecting. Neither he nor I want to lobby the FTA directly on an outcome because we want the report to be truly meritorious and not influenced by political considerations, and so he committed to kind of let the process work itself out, as did I, and we're both anxious to get the report in December. But I met today with Congressman Klein. I had meetings with Representative Butnick. I had breakfast with him, and I had some meetings with the national press yesterday, and so that kind of summarized the itinerary.
Any political activity with anybody at the White House, Mr. Rove, or any of the congressional political people? Or
no, I did not meet anybody from the White House, nor did I have meetings with anybody I would describe as political operatives. I did talk to Vin Weber. I don't know which camp you put him in. We talked about a whole variety of things.
Again, if you have a question, please press star 1.
If there are no further questions...
Sir, I have 2 more questions.
Oh, okay. All right, go ahead.
Michael Koo.
Governor, hi.
Hi, Michael.
To go back to the Defense of Marriage Act question, I wonder if you could say for us exactly what the problem is with granting two men or two women the same sort of legal status, you know, the hospital visitation rights or the next of kin rights? And what's the harm in allowing that?
Well, my own view of it is that a marriage should be reserved for a relationship between a man and a woman, and you know, that's the way society has traditionally viewed it. I think that's a good thing for purposes, and not all domestic relationships are the equivalent of marriage, nor should they be. I mean, that should be a institution and a designation that's kept on a separate platform for, I think, obvious and legitimate reasons. And that doesn't mean that we don't observe the civil rights or rights of other individuals and other types of relationships for certain purposes, but we don't automatically, in my view, elevate all domestic relationships to be the legal and social equivalent of marriage between a man and a woman.
Okay, thanks.
And as you may recall, Michael, I supported the 1993 amendments to the Minnesota Human Rights Act regarding sexual orientation discrimination. I have been an opponent, however, of gay marriages, gay adoptions, and domestic partner benefits.
Sir, our next question comes from Eric Escola.
Governor, two things in there. One is on DOMA again, just with this being the mother or father of all wedge issues, impact of this, Minnesota House races, congressional races, the presidential race in Minnesota, if this is on the ballot, political impact of this generally, if it was on the ballot. And two, on a totally different subject, President Brunick says today that time is running out on the T. Denny Sanford $35 million football stadium gift, and wondering if that falls through and the U can't raise the money privately, how does that recast your stadium debate for the coming session if it does?
Okay. On the first issue, Eric, it was on DOMA, and I'm forgetting or didn't quite hear what the thrust of it was. I'll answer it. I just can't reconstruct it.
Political impact of it.
Oh, impact, yeah. I'm sorry. Oh, I think it's going to be a high-profile issue. It's a type of issue that gets a lot of people passionate on both sides, and so it's unavoidable that it's going to be a significant issue, and that's the nature of democracy. I mean, people getting informed and activated and mobilized, you know, that's not a bad thing. That's what we have a democracy for, people to debate important public issues. So it's going to be visible, it's going to be significant, and that's the way it is with a lot of these issues. As to the stadium, I do wish the university well in their private fundraising. I hope they can raise the money themselves to get a stadium back on campus. I think that would be tremendous for the university. It would be tremendous for the state of Minnesota. If they fell a little short, as I've said in the past, I think I'd be willing to try to help them close the gap. But if all of that falls apart, I think some plan Bs would include, but not be limited to, getting them back at the table with the Vikings about a joint Vikings-Gopher stadium. The Gophers' involvement would justify some public investment, perhaps. Or there's some other plan Bs relating to the Metrodome that they, we could revisit relative to the Gophers, but it changes, if their private fundraising plans fall through, it changes the dynamics of the stadium debate in a way that would have us revisit some of those issues and looking for plan Bs or plan Cs.
Governor, I think you should probably get rolling to catch your flight as I look at the clock.
Actually, yeah, I'm at the airport here, and I think we have to catch it in about 20 minutes, so I'm going to have to jump off. Thank you, everybody, for your interest. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend, and I very much look forward to seeing you all next week.
Thank you. This will conclude today's call.